Good day, this is Greg, and I'll be reading the Vermilion County News for Tuesday, October 28th, 2025. And we'll start with the front page of the commercial news, where the first story today is titled Bed Building. Volunteers construct 20 on Saturday, more needed. And this is by Christy Jankowski. Danville. On Saturday morning, more than 50 volunteers put their hands to work building beds for those in need in the Lowe's parking lot. Pastor Frank McCulloch with Three Kings of Peace helped lead the project alongside court-appointed special advocates organizer Deanne Ryan. It was a great atmosphere, McCulloch said, adding the volunteers were among the young and old. Ryan added, "While the work is hard, it's so needed. I didn't realize how needed it was." Some of the volunteers were from Pier Court, thanks to Executive Director Katie Osterber. Some of her kids were there and had to do community service, and they loved it, Ryan said. They want to keep coming. That was kind of my original idea, to put the kids with the adults and kind of a mentoring thing. There is no way I can do this without them. Those guys are amazing, Ryan said about the Three Kings of Peace. Ryan has an entire room full of donated bedding. However, the group are still in need of twin bedding, especially sheets. There will be more events like that, and the reason why is that we have at least 100 or more people to come, where people have registered for beds for their children, McCulloch said. And we just want to help any way we can to provide families with beds so the kids will not sleep on the floor. Ryan said her work with CASA brought her to the Sleep and Heavenly Peace organization. I had a family, grandma, getting three kids from the foster care system and didn't have any beds, she added. So I thought, gosh, there has to be somebody that makes beds or helps with beds. McCulloch says, "When I see the list of people without beds to sleep on, it's heartbreaking. I promised Deanne that we'd do all we could in our Roselawn Street Center to assist her." The group of volunteers was called a great team of excellent bed builders by Larry Uphoff, the director of the Mahomet Sleep Heavenly Peace. Volunteers built 20 beds, with some being delivered Tuesday in Danville. Volunteers pledged to engage in future bed-building sessions at Lowe's. Lowe's assistant store manager Rodney Malone said of all of those who volunteered, "Our employees were pleased to help. They appreciate that Lowe's is 100% committed to giving back to the community." One of the Lowe's employees, Jessica Vallad, said, "As soon as they arrived, they got right to work. I was amazed to see how well they did. Everything just worked out perfectly," Ryan said. "Everybody who volunteered was just like, oh, this was wonderful. Such a sense of community. So they just loved it." And McCulloch wants to make sure people in Vermilion County realize this project is not just for those in Danville. "This is a great organization, and the beds are very needed for our communities," McCulloch said. "And not only Danville, but Westville, Tilton, Georgetown, anywhere they need them, we'll take them." McCulloch says he desires this to be a full community church effort and encourages other religious organizations to reach out to him. "If you wish to volunteer or are in need of a bed, contact Deanne Ryan at 217-474-3863 or Frank McCulloch at 217-766-873. There appears to be a number missing there, and I'm sorry, but we don't have it. Or you can go to the Sleep and Heavenly Peace website at www.volunteershpbeds.org. Next, we have candidates file for 2026 elections. And this is also by Christy Jankowski. Danville. It's filing day for the upcoming primary general election coming up in March of 2026. Carrie Wilson, the Chief Deputy County Clerk and Supervisor of Elections, said there have been quite a few candidates filing. The new candidates that have filed are Robin Heffern, County Clerk, Michael Hartshorn, Sheriff, John Thompson, Sheriff, Nate Byram, Supervisor of Assessments, Jason Whaling, Treasurer, Terry Prilliman, County Board District 1, Eric Luttrell, County Board District 2, Vic McFadden, County Board District 4, and Mackenzie Ellis White, County Board District 7. The requirements to file, she said, are pretty similar all around, but there are a few stipulations. The signature requirements do differ depending on the office and party the candidate is running for, she said. All candidates must have a statement of candidacy, signed petitions, statements of economic interest, a loyalty oath, which is optional, and fair campaign practices, optional as well. As far as whether there are any unfilled positions, she said they will not know until November 3rd. We did have quite a few packets obtained, so now we just wait to see who will file, she said. The last day to file and get on the March ballot is 5 p.m. on November 3rd. And our final story from the front page of the Commercial News for this Tuesday is a staff report, and it is titled, Governor Braun Calls Special Session to Alter Districts. On Monday, Governor Mike Braun issued a press release saying he would sign a proclamation calling a special legislative session for the General Assembly to convene on Monday, November 3rd, to consider altering the boundaries of Indiana's congressional districts and to consider resolving an important issue regarding federal and state tax compliance that must be addressed. From the press release, Indiana uses federal tax law as the starting point for the Indiana tax return, and the recent changes to federal tax law in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act include provisions that impact Indiana state tax filings. Addressing this discrepancy through a special session will provide taxpayers, accountants, and businesses the confidence and clarity ahead of the filing season, avoid amended returns and filing delays, and continue the Indiana Department of Revenue's strong record of fiscal management. Braun, I am calling a special legislative session to protect Hoosiers from efforts in other states that seek to diminish their voice in Washington and ensure their representation in Congress is fair. I am also asking the legislature to conform Indiana's tax code with the new federal tax provisions to ensure stability and certainty for taxpayers and tax preparers for 2026 filings. House Democratic Leader Phil Giaquinta, Democrat from Fort Wayne, said last week Hoosiers learned that Senate Republicans did not have the votes required to pass a blatantly rigged congressional map. After that news broke, it didn't take long for D.C. elites to swoop in and bully Republican lawmakers into bowing to their demands to put partisanship before solving Hoosiers' actual problems. Our state government is owned by Washington, D.C., instead of the people who should actually drive its decisions, Hoosiers. Washington, D.C. is broken and dysfunctional. Why would we listen to them when Hoosiers oppose mid-decade redistricting? If Governor Braun and State House Republicans were listening to Hoosiers, the majority of whom oppose mid-decade redistricting, we wouldn't be going into a special session. We wouldn't be wasting taxpayer dollars to redraw maps the House Republicans drew 4 years ago and described as beautiful and perfect. Poll after poll after poll has shown that Hoosiers do not want the General Assembly to redraw our congressional maps this year. Hoosiers, there is still an opportunity to have your voice heard. Call or email your state representative or senator now. Now is the time to share your views about this. The House and Senate still can lead with courage and common sense by rejecting the governor's call. There is no requirement that we pass the new congressional maps just because Republican Governor Braun caved to D.C. elites. I am grateful to Hoosiers who have voiced their opposition to this scheme. Hoosiers can stop these new maps from passing. There are massive problems in Indiana that demand leadership and action from the State House, like property taxes, utility bills, and health care costs. Our congressional districts are not one of them. Let's keep the focus on Hoosiers and reject this effort from out-of-state elites to change the rules of the game at halftime. And that's the end of the front page stories. From the local pages, we have a staff report now. This is titled, Turtle Run Hosts Mayor Williams Event. Danville. The city of Danville announces What's Brewing with Mayor Williams will be Wednesday, November 5th at Turtle Run Golf Course and Banquet Center. This community-focused event is the constituents' opportunity to connect directly with Mayor Ricky Williams Jr., along with members of the city's leadership team. Whether you have questions, ideas, or just want to listen, What's Brewing with Mayor Williams is designed to bring City Hall to the city neighborhoods. The evening will begin at 5 p.m. on November 5th with remarks from Rihanna Ollis, Community Relations Administrator in Danville, who will provide updates from the Community Relations Division and outline ways community members can engage with city services and initiatives. Then Mayor Williams will give a brief update on current city projects and priorities. The first 15 guests will receive a complimentary beverage. Turtle Run Golf Course and Banquet Center is located at 332 East Liberty Lane in Danville. And now we're going to turn to the obituaries for this Tuesday. Looks like we only have a couple, and the first today is for Una Frances Owen. Una Frances Davies Owen passed away at her home, surrounded by her loving family, on October 23, 2025, in Wheatfield, Indiana. According to her wishes, cremation rites will be arranged. Graveside services will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, October 29th, at Rossville Cemetery, with Pastor Jeremiah Hill officiating. Memorials may be made to the donor's choice. The family has entrusted the Blurton Funeral Home in Hoopston to assist them in honoring Una's life. Robert L. Young. Robert L. Young, 92, died at 6:35 a.m. on Friday, October 24th, 2025, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services for the Air Force veteran will be at 10:30 a.m. Thursday at Muncie Baptist Church at 205 Main Street in Muncie. Pastor Todd Creason will officiate, and burial will be in Oakwood Cemetery in Oakwood. A visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center at 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. And that is the end of the obituaries for today. We're going to turn to the News Gazette for a story now by Jennifer Bailey, also related to the upcoming elections. This is titled, Election 2026, Vermilion County. Candidates for Sheriff, Treasurer among first to file. Danville. Let the local election races begin. Monday was the first day for candidates to file for 2026 races for Vermilion County Sheriff, Treasurer, County Clerk, County Board, and other seats. Two candidates had filed in each of the sheriff's and treasurer's races first thing Monday morning. Vermilion County's longtime sheriff, Pat Hertshorn, 74, is retiring after 36 years. Those who filed Monday to succeed him include his son, Mike Hertshorn, 44, of Danville, a 10-year captain in the Sheriff's Department Investigation Division, and John W. Thompson, a former Danville Police Department officer and current Vermilion County 911 Center Director. Both are running as Republicans. Thompson, 57, is a 19-year veteran of the Danville Police and has been County 911 Director for 4 years. The Oakwood native also served many years in the Kickapoo and Oakwood Fire Departments, Oakwood Ambulance Service, and 3 years with the Illinois Department of Corrections. He and his wife, Amy, have 2 children. Thompson says he's always been devoted to public safety and helped design programs such as the Problem-Oriented Policing Unit. Sheriff is a position I have long considered, and now is the time I want to offer my experience and services. My strength has been finding and programming new and better ways to police our community to provide aggressive and fair law enforcement with integrity and effectiveness, Thompson said. At least one Democrat is considering running for sheriff as well. Hugh Sands of Rossville previously picked up the necessary paperwork to seek the office. He has been retired from his approximately 22-year law enforcement career, including with Catlin, Georgetown, and Oakwood for 10 years. Since his retirement, he's been a truck driver working as a road captain and driver trainer for Nussbaum Transportation. For the county treasurer's race, Darren Duncan of Rossville, in office since 2017, filed Monday to seek re-election. Opposing him is financial professional Jason Whaling of Oakwood. Others who filed Monday include Robin Heffern for county clerk, Aaron Hurd for regional superintendent of schools, Nate Byram for supervisor of assessments, and county board candidates Terry Prilliman, Eric Luttrell, Kevin Bodine, Vic McFadden, Phil Jackson, Chris Lamar, and Mackenzie Ellis-White. According to Kerry Wilson, Chief Deputy County Clerk and Supervisor of Elections with the Vermilion County Clerk's Office, they had a decent line of candidates Monday morning to file for the first spot on the ballot. There will be one lottery, so far, for treasurer candidates filing at the same time. The clerk's office also is accepting election filings for offices including Board of Review, Regional Office of Education, and Precinct Committee Persons. Candidates must file petition packets with the Vermilion County Clerk by 5 p.m. November 3rd to be on next year's ballot. The 2026 primary election will be held on March 17th. The office reminds candidates that all paperwork must be notarized and bound prior to filing. The clerk's office has notaries available. And from the sports pages, we have a story titled A Moment to Celebrate. OSF wins third straight regional in overtime. This is by Marvin Holman. Bismarck. The Oakwood Salt Fork boys soccer team may be young, but they make the most of the big moments. Entering the second half of Saturday's IHSA Class 1A Regional, the Comets were down 1-0 to Fisher, Gibson City, Melvin Sibley, but they were ready to fight back. Mason Swartz scored in the second half to tie things up, and Pedro Rangel V scored on a penalty kick in the second half of overtime to give OSF a 2-1 win and its third straight regional championship. It's definitely tough getting into a situation like that where it feels like I have all the pressure, but when it comes down to it, Rangel said, I felt like I had it because from multiple PKs through the year and my teammates behind me for support, even if I miss. It happened to go straight where I wanted it, and that's the best sensation in the world. We moved him to striker to make some things happen, and we had better opportunities in the second half and overtime, OSF coach Eric Fenton said about Rangel. He is our guy on PKs, and when that whistle blew, I knew who to go to. The Bunnies scored the first goal when Joey Goodwin scored on an assist from Lane Byers and outplayed the Comets for most of the half. They are a good team, and they play the right way, without the ball, and we were not doing a good job matching it, Fenton said. We were warned ahead of time of number 11, Drew Iverson, and how things ran through him, and we were waiting for the ball, and they stepped in front of us, and we couldn't have played any flatter than if we tried in the second half. We turned things around and built some momentum, and we were creating better chances. This whole season we have been a second-half team. It is not ideal, but it works, OSF senior Trevor McCall said. We have great coaches in Coach Fenton and Coach Landon Turner, and they give us good talks in halftime, and we pulled through. In the second half, Swartz scored on an assist from Tristan Wenzelman. The game stayed 1-1 through the end of regulation. After a scoreless first half of overtime, Fisher goalkeeper Cameron Keating was called for a penalty, setting up the penalty kick for Rangel and redemption for last year's sectional. In that game, the Bunnies beat the Comets 3-1. These guys knocked us out of sectionals last year, and they have a new coach, but there is no real overlap, and it was great to get some revenge, Fenton said. The team has had ups and downs as they tried to navigate with only three seniors on the roster. We have a young team this year, and it was difficult to start the season, McCall said. But we have grown, and there has been team bonding, and we're coming together, and that has been good. We only have three seniors, but we lead everything in practice. From the start of the year, everyone felt after we lost a couple of players that we were not going to do as good as last year, Rangel said. But I knew with the players and development we were going to get, we are going to have a solid team throughout. Everyone was going to communicate and have everyone's back, and we are like a family, and that makes things easier. The two seniors, McCall and Connor Taflinger, that start are the backbone of the defense, along with Lucas Tyres. Fenton said games like this, they put their work in even if they don't see their name in the scorebook. OSF goalkeeper Wrigley Hart has had 5 saves in goal, while Keating had 7. The Comets are 18-7, and will play host Williamville today in sectional play at 5 p.m. This will be a tough competition, Rangel said. We just have to play like we do every game. Give it all we got and leave it on the field. It's going to be a trek, but we will take it, and we don't want to complain, Fenton said. Losing 13 seniors from last year and having those main three of Rangel, Swartz, and Owen Reinhardt spearheading our attack, it has been a much better season than I anticipated. Next, we have another Marvin Holman story. This is titled Danville Seniors Reflect on Season's End. Danville. For the last time, 9 Danville seniors took part in playing at Ned Weitzel Field. While the Vikings ended up losing 54-13 to Peoria Notre Dame, the seniors reflected after the rituals of bringing it in for a cheer and doing jumping jacks on the field after the game, and how they will leave things for players in the future. It's tough knowing that I am not going to be able to do that anymore, but the foundation I built will be carried on with DeMario Jackson. Senior Ajani Davis, who leads the cheer and jumping jacks, said, "He is going to make sure they are going to have energy, have the vibe right, and make sure that everyone is flying around and doing what they need to do." Jumping jacks are the best part, especially after a win. Danville senior quarterback Aiden Henderson said, "We come together and feel the energy from all of us. We were giving it our all with the jumping jacks, and on the last one, it felt like family." The seniors were part of a bigger group, as freshman and Danville coach Marcus Forrest said that he is thankful for the group that stayed. "I appreciated out of a group of 25, those were 9 that stuck it out and played hard, irrelevant of any outcome. It wasn't for a lack of trying or playing hard," Forrest said. "We had some that didn't have varsity experience, and they came out and gave everything they could. I'm proud of them and how they worked to help keep the team together to a point where every week was energetic. When we took lumps on Friday, they were energetic in practice on Saturday. They came in on Monday when we ripped their tail watching film, and they were ready to go on Tuesday. There will be some ready to go to the military, going to college or the workforce, but all of them did what they could to lay a great foundation, and that is what I'm happy about." The game was back and forth for the first quarter and a half, but after the Irish scored first, the Vikings came back on a 15-yard pass from Henderson to Jackson to get within 8-6. With PND up 16-6 in the second, Henderson hit Jackson with a 52-yard pass to cut things down to 16-13. Henderson also used some savvy early on by causing a few encroachment penalties that kept those drives going. It goes back to working all the week during practice, and if we were disciplined, we throw them off sides, Henderson said. "Everyone thinks Danville goes off on the first count, but we threw them off a couple of times with the count and worked." But after that, the Irish continued to build up the points. "They are a team that are built to run the ball, and they want to put pressure on you and want you to turn the ball over," Forrest said. "One of the things you do is when you make a mistake, you play into their hands. We had a turnover and mental mistakes that turned a 1st and 5 to a 1st and 15. We have to take this until next season. They will be a year wiser and more confident, and they will be better prepared." With Jackson coming back as the lone captain from this season, Forrest believes that he can cause that change for next season. "It's definitely heartbreaking to see the season end like this," Henderson said. "We came into a season with such high hopes, and we have been lifting weights and going over plays and hoping for a great season. Finishing with a loss and not the record we wanted is heartbreaking." And finally, from the Community Briefs section today, we have Foodmobile comes to Vermilion County. The Eastern Illinois Food Bank is distributing food to local families facing food insecurity, as the Foodmobile will visit Vermilion County on Tuesday, October 28th. The first stop will be Chrisman Park in Rossville from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m., while the second stop will be from 11:30 to 1:30 p.m. at Ward Park in Ridge Farm. For more information, go to the Eastern Illinois Food Bank website. And that takes us to the end of our time for this Tuesday, October 28th, 2025. Again, my name is Greg, and as always, it's been a pleasure to read for you, and I hope that you have a splendid day. Take care.